Radio Free Readout begins in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Merry Christmas, Patriots! This is Radio Free Readout, broadcasting from the Free Zones into occupied America and the rest of the country and the other pockets of free Americans, conservative strongholds, wherever you are. Welcome, and I hope you guys are getting all your Christmas shopping done and that you, in the process, that you're not forgetting the true reason for the season. Thank you for tuning in. We've got a special guest that's going to be joining us starting in segment two, the author of the series, the Going Home series, A American. He's going to be joining us, and we're going to be talking about, well, his books 1 through 6, and then book 7 is coming out very soon. We're going to be talking about that, some of the inspirations for the story and how that journey is unfolded, and some of the content in the books and some things that you, especially Amaron operators, might have to look forward to. So tune in, and we will get to that here in just a little bit. I want to make a couple of announcements. Next week, the staff, all the partisans of Radio Free Readout and Amaron are going to be taking this next week off. So, minimal response to emails, and we will not be producing podcasts next Sunday. We will probably just be re-airing this one for those who didn't get the word and tune in anyway. We will not be doing a partisan radio podcast this week or next week, and we're going to hit the ground running right after the New Year's. We've got a lot of stuff lined up, and we're real excited about it. And we are going to take some much needed time off this coming week. And so I just want to say bless you guys through the holidays. Just remember what we are doing all of this for. Don't lose sight of that. Of course, who am I talking to? You guys are not, you guys are squared away. You know exactly what this is all about and why we do what we do. Celebrating the birth of Christ. You get it. You get it. The website is radiofreereadout.com, and you can always contact me through johnjacob@radiofreereadout.com. But remember, I am going to be a minimalist this coming week when it comes to returning emails. However, I know there's some that have slipped through the cracks. Some folks have asked me some specific questions about purchasing ham radio gear or other questions and comments that really I wanted to address, and I can't find them. There's like three of them. So if you contacted me and have not gotten a response for a question that you had or some input about something, let me know. Email me again, because I can't find it, because I got another wave of emails, and then they get lost like needles in a stack of needles. So help me out there. We've got lots to look forward to. So let's get into the news and commentary. And the news and commentary is brought to you and sponsored by Glenn Tate and the 299 Days book series about the collapse and the rebuilding. And you can go to 299days.com to learn more. In the news, wow, this is what's coming to America at some point in the future. You know when they always say, you know, these human rights laws and homosexual advancement and Islam and all that. Okay, all right. You just can't, that doesn't apply to pastors. You know, just when you get outside the church, then that's where your religious liberty stops at the door. Once you step outside of that box, well, then you do not have religious liberty. Somewhere, somehow, somebody's decided that you have religious liberty as long as you're inside of a church. Well, we all knew this day would come, and this is from freedomforce.com. But we never thought it would be so soon. For Christians, there's always been places that it was unlawful to preach the truth. Hundreds of years ago, the British Isles was such a place. But in recent history, along with America, Britain was considered a place of free expression. Thanks to political correctness, those days are coming to a close. A pastor in Northern Ireland who was prosecuted with a hate crime for denouncing the Islamic, well, they call it a religion. It's not a religion. It's an Islamic system, which has religious components to it. During a Sunday sermon last year, appeared in court this week as his criminal trial moves forward. Criminal trial for a Christian pastor to denounce Islam. That is happening in Ireland. Oh, I know, it's across the ocean. It's not going to affect us here, right? Well, you need to recalculate. As previously reported, Pastor James McConnell of Whitewell Metropolitan Church in northern Belfast made comments concerning Islam, which brought the ire of Ulster officials. His own countrymen are going to prosecute and persecute him. His comments were in the context of a sermon of one true God. The government considered his comments to be hate speech, and the charges against McConnell prompted his assistant pastor to resign. Now the pastor has had his first day in court. So we're going to continue watching this, and this is the first of those dominoes that are going to start falling. Amazing. Now, remember what I said about this new global system, all worshiping at the altar of the green cult, the new global climate change. They're going to save us from ourselves. And they've been trying to get this thing going for the longest time. Well, 200 nations signed on to this green cult and dragging the rest of us with our taxpayer dollars to fund it. And they are so arrogant. General Ban Ki-moon from the United Nations, the Secretary General, he said, "What was once unthinkable is now unstoppable." And they're talking about this global system of tyranny, of chains that they are putting on the people of the world, including American citizens. We don't use the term global citizens here unless we are using it to chastise anti-Americans. But that's what they want us to think, that it's global citizens. It's all about global citizens. From nationalreview.com, Human Rights Campaign is calling for Christian colleges to repent of their Christianity. On Friday, the nation's largest gay rights organization called the Human Rights Campaign, HRC, released a chilling report that investigates a disturbing trend, quote, disturbing trend, of religious colleges taking legal measures to exercise their religious liberty using waivers available to them under Title IX. And you can read more over at the National Review, but they are screaming and complaining that Christian universities are using these religious freedom waivers to get out from the clutches of this so-called human rights campaign. So, well, they're going to be doing just like they're doing to this Irish pastor. They're going to attack. Well, they have to criminalize anything that goes against their agenda. And that's what's coming. Yesterday, in case you didn't tune in to Radio Free Redoubt on the American Christian Network, I mentioned that there's no government to protect us now. We are on our own. We are entering the brave new world now. Now, as I mentioned, I'm not anti-government, but the people who have worked to infiltrate and undermine our government and the principles of the Founding Fathers and our Constitution are clearly on a deliberate path of destroying this country all the way down to the foundational level. And we saw another nail go into the coffin of what once was the greatest republic to ever exist on the face of the planet. This spending bill, this multi-billion, over $1.2 trillion, and they gobbled up so much power with the passage of that, not to mention spending money that we don't have, further enslaving us, the next generation, and the following generations. We're mathematically impossible to ever get out of the debt that they've created for us, the chains. 2,000 plus pages in this so-called omnibus bill, which funds sanctuary cities, which are illegal and against the law. They are in defiance of our nation's laws. They're funding Middle East immigration programs to bring Muslims into the United States to forever alter our nation and our culture. It funds illegal alien resettlements. It quadruples the H-2B foreign worker visas, which they said that they're going to be putting the brakes on because they can't vet people. Now they're going to quadruple them. It funds tax credits for illegal aliens. And it locks in huge spending increases. It also falls short of allocating funds for completing the 700-mile double-layer border fence that Congress promised the American people. Everything that they promised us, they crawfished. They went back on their word. Here's something funny. The Homeland Security Department finally, for the first time in 5 years, activated the National Terrorism Advisory System. As they open up our borders and they bring more Muslims in, and after what, how many attacks? Was it 27 Muslim attacks, Islamic attacks we've had on American soil? And now after San Bernardino, they finally raise the National Terrorism Advisory. Probably because they were waiting for some right-wing extremists to try to pull something. And this is going on at a time where citizens in Sweden are now getting threatening letters in their mailboxes telling them that they need to either convert to Islam or pay a religious tax or face beheading in Sweden. So we see how the open arms immigration policy has worked out for them. Now let's see if we can just duplicate that here. See how that works out. And this is going on while, according to Judicial Watch, last week, a Middle Eastern woman was caught surveilling a U.S. port of entry on the Mexican border, holding a sketchbook with Arabic writing and drawings of the facility and its security systems. And that came from federal law enforcement sources who reported to Judicial Watch. And in the meantime, Fox News also reported this week that the Obama administration cannot be sure of the whereabouts of thousands of foreigners in the U.S. who had their visas revoked over terror concerns and other reasons, a State Department official acknowledged on Thursday. And even in the American Redoubt, despite the county governments and the citizens pushing for more controls and to put a stop on bringing Muslim immigrants, even into the American Redoubt, there is one city council in Sandpoint, Idaho, who is trying to change the what they call the perception of this area of being xenophobic and full of hate. So they are going to develop a plan to deliberately target immigrants to recruit and bring into the community of Sandpoint, Idaho. They need to watch some YouTube videos of the testimonies of those in Sweden who are talking about how well this immigration plan of bringing in Muslims into their country has worked out for them. Now, last week, I talked about Skylar Barbeau, who was arrested by FBI agents and U.S. Marshals on firearms charges. As I was wrapping up the informant, agent, and Moles series, talking about how we need to start thinking differently and operating differently as patriots, how to avoid, how to detect, what to do if you're confronted with or detect informants, agents provocateur, those who are trying to entrap the patriots. Well, tomorrow he is going to be arraigned. A lot of support is coming forward, and there is a lot of information that's coming out now showing that the government has reportedly botched several things involved with this investigation, from the investigation all the way through to the search warrants and the execution of those search warrants. So we're going to continue to follow that situation as well. And we're also keeping a very close eye on this situation with the Hammond family, the rancher family in Oregon, who was charged with domestic terrorism for starting a backfire, a a back burn to control a wildfire, and it got out of control, and they charged them with domestic terrorism for deliberately starting a fire, which is really interesting because I think it was just 2 years before that in that same region, the BLM started a backfire, which got out of control, burned up public property, private property, killed numerous cattle, damaged a lot of property, and no accountability. But a rancher who's sitting on a piece of land that the BLM's been trying to push him off of for a long time, he starts a backfire, it gets out of control, and they charge him with domestic terrorism. That is a sin. And there are several patriot groups, including the Bundy family, who have been directly involved. I know myself, I've been involved in a couple of conference calls with legislators and political activists and those in the patriot community who are working to try to find a solution to this. They're talking about sending the father and the son, the ranchers of the Hammond family, to prison after they've already served prison for the same thing. So you have some double jeopardy issues. All of this is being looked at and all avenues are being pursued, but we're going to continue to follow that closely. And we'll bring information to you guys related to that. And then I got a couple of other special categories for the news. From the please remove God from my sight because he makes me feel uncomfortable category, there's an article that somebody sent in to me. An atheist staying at a NIU campus hotel was offended when she found a Bible in the night table drawer and demanded removal of all Bibles. And that's from the PeoriaPublicRadio.org article. Bibles can no longer be found in the rooms of the Northern Illinois University campus hotel after a secular group complained it had no place in nightstands. Freedom From Religion Foundation co-president Annie Laurie Gaylor found a Bible in a drawer when she visited the campus last month for a speech sponsored by the Secular Student Alliance. And the foundation's lawyer wrote a letter to the Holmes Student Center director requesting the Bibles be removed. Wow. So now the university is removing the Bibles immediately. And they said that, of course, you know, they're falling all over themselves to apologize. And the spokesman for the university said that he added that university officials are very conscious of the separation of church and state. Now, it's a good thing they found that Bible and got it removed and all of the Bibles. Can you imagine something that evil and vile? What if a child had opened up that drawer and actually saw that Bible? What if they opened it? And what if they started reading it? So these intellectual elites have saved some innocent person by removing that despicable thing, which cannot be mentioned. Wow. Now, from the let's pretend it never happened and that it's not part of our heritage and that everybody join in to erase history segment of the news. New Orleans City Council voted to remove Confederate monuments that have been there for, what, 150 years? The New Orleans City Council voted 6-1 to remove four Confederate monuments after a heated months-long debate declaring the Civil War era statues and obelisk to be public nuisances. Monuments to our national heritage are public nuisances now. Why? Because they represent the losing side. Mayor Mitch Landrieu called for the monument's removal this summer. He said, "We, the people of New Orleans, have the power and we have the right to correct these historical wrongs." Mr. Landrieu said before the council vote, he suggested the monuments be placed in a museum or Civil War park. Yeah, until those are banned. The monuments include a bronze statue of General Robert E. Lee in a traffic circle named Lee Circle. And that was in the Central Business District since 1884. And an obelisk in the French Quarter to recognize the Battle of Liberty Place. The city council also voted to remove statues of Beauregard, P.G.T. Beauregard, a Confederate general, and Jefferson Davis, the president of the Confederacy. And they're saying, look, get over it. This is the new America. These guys lost. So move on. And I got thinking about this. I think, well, let's go with that. I mean, let's take it a step further. Why don't we remove the memorials at other famous battles of Wounded Knee and Little Bighorn? Let's just remove those and restore the land to exactly how it was 200 years ago. Plant trees, everything. Let's get rid of Wounded Knee and Little Bighorn and all the other battlefields and monuments across the United States. I mean, after all, look, they lost. They should just get over it and move on, right? This is a new America now, and we don't need to be reminded of a past of hate and violence, right? Because weren't they just a bunch of weren't the Indians just a bunch of xenophobic haters who just wanted to keep others that aren't like them out? Interesting. But see, if we want to keep Islam out from coming into our culture, we're xenophobic and hateful. But see, they wanted to keep the immigrants out for coming to take their land and forcing their customs and religious on the people who already lived there, which is why we need to embrace Islam in this country so we can have somebody take our land and force their customs and religious on the people who already live here. So I just say, just, you know, let's just get rid of all of our history. If we could just make all of it go away, we could start fresh with fresh new ideas, and maybe we can reinstitute communism, because then nobody will have any recollection that it has failed. Or let's eliminate all of the history about the atrocities that Islam has done all through history, all the way up into yesterday. And we'll just wipe the slate clean, because that way we'll all be convinced that it really is a system of peace. Well, that's enough of that. All right, it's Christmas, darn it. So you guys try to spend some time with your family, with your friends this week, and celebrate the birth of our king. As we, at the same time, mourn the loss of our republic. But hey, it's a new beginning. It's just the end of one chapter. It's the beginning of another one. And we were born for the time that we were in. So find your role and be prepared to step into that role, whatever it might be. All right? And there's some great things that in the days ahead, potentially, we could be faced with some very real threats, that A American has given us some food for thought with some of the scenarios that we could be confronted with in the future, and a lot of principles that carry over that could help us pretty much in any type of a disaster or emergency type situation, or just life, dealing with life. So we're going to talk to him when we come back. This is Radio Free Redoubt.
Stubbornness, stupidity, and foolishness are all the things that have come out of Capitol Hill this week. From the Fed rate raise to the passing of another $1 trillion pork-laden spending bill, and many, many other stories. In fact, it was hard to choose this week. Hello, everyone. This is Fox 519 here, bringing you the news that matters to your pocketbooks as patriots and preppers. This is Eye in the Economy, brought to you by Radio Free Redoubt. Hello, everyone. Fox 519 here. Over the past couple of weeks, there has been a slot available open for patriots just like you and me who want to share important preparedness products for the future. Well, we have another sponsor coming on board next week, and we are very excited. And frankly, if you live in the Pacific Northwest, it is one of the most important preps you can store. Stay tuned next week and see who our new sponsor is. Well, welcome back, and this week's financial news isn't as jolly for the holiday season as I would like it to be. In fact, it's downright frustrating. It's like they just don't know how much damage they're doing. But in fact, they do know. Oh yes, they do. Well, let's start with the Fed rate raise. The Federal Reserve raised its interest rates for the first time in almost a decade, a widely telegraphed move by Janet Yellen, who said that the following, quote, gradual tightening as officials watch for evidence of higher inflation. In fact, their inflation rate is 2% that they're shooting for. Now, the Federal Reserve Open Market Committee unanimously voted to set a new target range for the federal funds rate from 0.2% to 2.25% up to a possible 0.5%, and then that was up from 0 and 0.25% before. Now, the Fed policymakers separately forecasted an appropriate rate of 1.375 by the end of 2016, the same as September. Now, this is implying our fourth quarter point increases and are in the targeted range next year, based on the meeting number of the 17 officials. Now, everyone's asking Fox, why did this happen? Well, because Yellen thinks the following, quote, "The economic recovery has clearly come a long way, although it is not yet complete." She furrows on with, "The committee policy expects that the gradual adjustments in the stance of monetary policy, economic activity, will continue to expand at a moderate pace, and the labor market indicators will continue to strengthen." No, I'm sorry. The labor market indicators have not strengthened. In fact, jobs are actually on the other direction. Now, obviously we know this is wrong, dead wrong. In fact, it's going to do the opposite. Let's take a look at what the policy change will affect. Credit cards and short-term debt. Guaranteed, this new rate will be passed along to credit card users as a new set of extra fees that big companies will need to, quote, offset their borrowing costs. Now, let's look at short-term mortgages. Think you may want a 5-1 or a 7-1-hour mortgage? Nope, you don't any longer. Now, let's look at the biggest problem of all, the national debt. Thinking of the $18 trillion that we've had accruing interest all along, now let's add another 0.25% of that. It's no wonder that within moments of the announcement, the U.S. Treasury market dropped by 10 basis points. People began to wise up very quickly that the, quote, "full faith and credit of the U.S. is now on the ropes." And Yellen and her troop of dancing monkeys put us there. And it's going to cost us all dearly. In fact, it's going to cost us about $1 trillion more here in 2016. Let's shift gears a little bit and talk about the traitorous Paul Ryan and his new kick-the-can budget that he and the rest of the mouth-breathers on Capitol Hill just did to us. Now, this new budget is being classified by both mainstream and alternative economists as a, quote, "spend more and promise to spend less in the future budget." Yeah, like that'll ever happen. The new budget agreement, which looks a lot like the 2013 deal, busts the budget caps. And in this case, politicians in D.C. have approved an additional $50 billion in spending for the 2016 fiscal year, which did start October 1st, and an additional $30 billion of additional spending in 2017, starting on October 1st, 2016. So we're already spending money in the future that we don't have. Now, why is this? Well, the president means to undo his further and almost biggest financial fiscal defeat. That would be Obamacare. Now, as far as selling their souls to the demon of debt, what did Republicans get in exchange? Well, they got higher defense spending, of course, and some of them are dubiously and are probably happy about the fact that domestic spending is going up as well. These politicians are presumably happy, at least behind closed doors that we know of. Paul Ryan sold us down the river and tied a brick to our foot at the same time for the future. So, how are they going to pay for all this spending? Well, the deal has a handful of backdoor revenue increases, including the assumption that the IRS will begin to aggressively squeeze money out of taxpayers for the future. Yep, more taxes are coming. Are we ready for another Stamp Act, everyone? Now, there are a few, albeit small, improvements to the budget, like some budget gimmicks, along with some tinkering with the entitlement programs, especially the fraud-ridden disability program that will ostensibly lead to some moderate savings. I don't believe that's going to happen, everyone. Now, the net result is we're going to have a pact that leads to guaranteed spending increases in year over year that will further drive us into debt. They don't care. They don't believe in tightening their belts and doing the right thing. This is going to be bad. Really bad. Now, what Congress doesn't even realize is that there are baby boomers getting ready to retire. When they do, they're going to start drawing from the 401k as well as the Social Security system. It won't matter how much you tinker with the budget. We're still going to be in big, big trouble. Now, finally tonight, we here at Eye in the Economy want to wish everyone, you and your families and fellow patriots out there, a very Merry Christmas. We hope that the blessings of the Lord are upon you in this coming year, and may God guide us in the readout this year. Merry Christmas, everyone. I say that proudly, and I'll say it again. Merry Christmas. Thank you for listening in this past year, and for Eye on the Economy and Radio Free Readout, this is Fox 519 signing off. God bless.
From all of the partisans at Radio Free Readout, thank you, listeners and Amron operators, for being out there. Have a very Merry Christmas and a blessed New Year.
All right, thank you guys for that, for the partisans and Fox 519. Appreciate it much. All right, this segment is brought to you by Selkirk Mountain Real Estate to help Patriots get situated to the American Redoubt. If you are eyeballing the northern part of the panhandle of North Idaho, check him out. Patriot-owned business at www.selkirkmountainrealestate.com. All right, as promised, we have a special guest today here at Radio Free Redoubt, and one that many of you out there in the listening audience are already familiar with, because you've been reading his book series, and it's an honor to bring to you the author of the Going Home series, as we call it. Book 6, Enforcing Home, is out, and book 7 is right on the precipice of being released. So, American, it's an honor to have you with us on Radio Free Redoubt. Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely, man. I'm glad to be here. It's really cool to talk to you guys. You know, I was trying to get a hold of you for a long time, and the fact that it finally happened, I was really happy about it. So,
well, that's pretty cool, because I had heard, you know, it was interesting timing, because I kept having, you know, listeners say, man, you know, these book series are great, but you got to check this one out. This is another one to add to your must have, you know, in your library, the Going Home series by A. American. And I'm thinking, I've seen that around. I keep hearing about it. So I ended up getting the books, and I just, you know, I devoured them. I just went right through them. But it was kind of funny, because the first time I had contacted you, I think it was just within a few days after finishing, or maybe I wasn't quite finished with the 6th book, Enforcing Home. And I told you, I felt like I had spent the last 6 weeks in Florida. I feel like I know the area really well now.
Yeah, right. It's a little different from where you're at up there, you know.
No kidding. Yeah, totally different topography, but a great story, and it's really inspired me. You know, some other things that I've kind of had on the back burner as well, and I think that the scenario is extremely plausible. So let's go back to that. And by the way, this takes, you know, for the listeners, this mostly takes place in Florida. That's where it entirely takes place, books 1 through 6. And this is a story that starts off with your main character being caught and a long ways from home and having to make that trip. So let's talk about this, how it started. Just give them an overview of the story and what kind of sets the foundation for everything else that's built on book 1.
Yeah, well, you know, Morgan Carter, he's our main guy, and Morgan was on a service call at a facility up in Georgia when he was away from home. So he was on his way back home, riding down Interstate 10 just outside of Tallahassee when everything dies, when the balloon goes up, as he'll say sometimes.
Yeah.
And so he finds himself stuck on the side of I-10. And being someone in our thought process that thinks the way a lot of us do, he kind of came to terms real quick with what was happening. You know, when the car wasn't working and the cell phone was bad, and he walks out of his – gets out of his car, walks up the top of the hill and looks down I-10 and sees that all the cars are stopped. He figures out pretty quick that something's wrong, you know.
Yeah.
And comes to terms with what he has to do. Now, it's not like, oh, I got to walk home. This is no big deal. I'm going to do it. He understands the gravity of the situation. And, I mean, you know, he starts thinking about his wife and kids. He gets sick and pukes on the side of the road, you know,
yes.
at what's facing him, you know. you know, because Morgan's, he's nobody special. He's not a former SF guy, you know. He's not a SEAL Team 6 ninja. He's none of that stuff. He's just a regular guy that.
Family man.
He's a family guy, yeah, but he's turned on in that he understands what our world's like, the threats we face and the possibilities and potential disasters. And so like many of us, he's a little prepared. And, you know, he spends the first night there in his truck and thinking about things, and he gets up in the morning and pretty much starts that 250-mile trek down the peninsula of Florida trying to get back home.
Yeah.
And – you know, and then that's a tough thing to think about. You know, that's a long way, you know.
Yes.
And the reason I did that whole scenario there is I used to run that exact same route all the time. I used to service security control systems in jails and prisons all over the country. And I ended up settled in the Southeast and did a lot of stuff in Georgia, and I lived down in the same area Morgan does. And so I drove that exact route all the time. And the whole this whole thing started as just a thought exercise for me of what would I do?
Sure.
And that's why I started writing it. I mean, I started writing it simply for fun, for me, kind of playing it out, wargaming it, thinking about what I would do. And it certainly took on a life of its own and became more than I ever – I never even imagined what it was going to become. To me, I was just writing something for fun.
Yeah, exactly. You start kind of wargaming it in your head. You know, I was in the same situation. I was working down in Colorado Springs for several summers, you know, and driving, you know, back and forth. And I was all geared up, just like your main character here, Morgan, is. And what's interesting, too, is we've got – our home group, our home church, has really taken a right turn as far as getting their heads in the game, as far as where we're at in our culture, our country, the threats that we face, and they've really gotten turned on. I started them off with reading One Second After by William Fortune, and that, talking about their eyes getting the size of saucers, you know, there's like, wow, oh, this is serious. And so now they're all reading the Going Home series. And you know, most of them are in book two, book three, and I think one gal's already – she's just devouring it. She's already in book four. So this – and there's some people – the reason why I brought that up is because there's some folks in that home group that do travel a lot. They go over to Montana. You know, they're 200 to 300 miles from home. And this one guy says, I never really even stopped to think about what if something like this happened when I'm that far away from home. He says, so I started rethinking some stuff. And now they're all, you know, they're getting firearms, some of them for the first time. They're taking training. They're putting gear and bags together. And this type of this genre really starts the conversation in people's heads. And it makes it – what you've done with this is made it so personal that people say, this could be me. And so I think that really resonates with folks.
And that's one of the things I try to do is to get to that personal level where people can put themselves there. You know, Morgan's not a – he's not the – he didn't always make the right choice. Sometimes he makes the wrong choice. He acts a little too fast in some instances. But he's not a perfect person, you know. He makes a decision with the information he has at the time, you know. And in this world, that's one of the things, like with Penguin, when Penguin first picked the books up, they had a issue with one of the scenes in the book. And I tried to explain to him, I said, in this world, there is no second place.
Yeah.
You have to act first. You know, you can't wait until – give the other guy the benefit of the doubt. You know, you can't do that. Yep. You've got to decide pretty quick which way this is going to go. And action is always faster than reaction. Simple fact. So,
yeah. And
you know,
and
you got to be in front of the OODA loop. You know, you got to be the one initiating the action and put him behind you.
You have to maintain the initiative. When you're living in a world without the rule of law, you know, there's nobody to come along and sit there and second guess, you know, your decisions or bring you back to life when you made the wrong decision or waited too long. When you're dealing with evil people that have no restraint, it changes the rules.
Yeah, as I like to say, when the thin veil of civility is lifted, because that's all we are. We're held together by a very thin veil of there's laws and consequences, you know, to your actions, and so everybody kind of for the most part goes along with the rules.
Right.
But when those rules go out the window, a lot of folks say all people are inherently good and there's good in everybody. I'm from the entirely opposite end of the spectrum. I say all people, for the most part, aren't bad, but they do have a certain level of – evil is not the right word, but they will do what it takes to survive.
Yeah, well, there is a streak in everyone that in certain circumstances can come out. We all battle with that and struggle with that. But sometimes, you know, making that decision – in the world that you're in, you have to look at these villages in Mexico now where the cartels have completely overrun. It's illegal to own a firearm. The police and the military won't come to these people's rescue because they're either paid off or too afraid to go into those areas. So you got whole villages now that are arming themselves to defend their villages from having their girls, you know, thrown in the back of a truck and hauled off. You know, it's when you're living in that kind of a world, or the folks that are running for their lives in Iraq from ISIS right now, you know, people on the other side of the world can second guess your decisions and say, well, that's not very Christian. That's not very civil. But it's either that or you die. You brought some scenarios.
There is no help coming. You know, that's the other thing is everything now is a flip of a switch or a press of a button or a phone call away. Just like you said, the folks that are now realizing that they travel 200-300 miles from home, they never really considered that. You know, right now you can jump in the car and 5 hours from now you can be 250 miles from home.
That's right.
You take the car, the truck, the plane, the train, the automobile, the boat, the helicopter, whatever out of that picture, you're talking weeks and weeks of travel to achieve that.
That's without any resisting forces trying to impede you.
Oh, yeah. That's if you can just simply Joe Lob Cop the can kicker, head down the road, and nobody's bothering you.
That's right.
You throw in all the things you're going to come to, small towns fortifying themselves, saying we're not going to let nobody else in because we've got enough to deal with, to the bandits on the road, the raiders, whatever you want to call them.
Opportunists.
The other helpless folks out there that are going to look to you because you may look like you have your together and they think you're going to help them, you know. Yeah. So it gets daunting real fast.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you did a really good job painting this picture of this new dystopian world. And you really brought some scenarios forward that have generated some discussions, moral dilemmas. And I'll tell you what, it has gotten a lot of discussions started that, you know, I've been confronted with, family, friends, listeners who have said, man, this one situation here, this scenario, man, that was pretty brutal. But was that the right thing? What's an alternative? So people are actually they're holding these discussions about what would we do if we were faced with that? And it really forces you to think about some of those things. So good job. Now, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, I want to talk about how you actually took this from concept to actually making it into something that someone could digest and read. And we're also going to talk about some special surprises and some, I guess, what's going to make the next book, book 7, so unique. And hopefully talk about when that will be released very soon here. So if you wouldn't mind sticking around, want to definitely talk about some of these other things as well.
Yeah, this is going to be fun, some of the stuff we're fixing to talk about. So
right on. Okay, sir. Well, stand by. This is Radio Free Redoubt. You're listening to A American here at Radio Free Redoubt talking about the Going Home series. Stay right there. We'll be back in just a minute.
This is Papa Zed from Central Illinois wishing Amron and Radio Free Redoubt a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And everybody have a blessed one.
This is Amron Corps Operator Charlie Mike 01, wishing everyone a blessed Merry Christmas.
This is Juliet 59 from the Texas Redoubt, wishing Amron and Radio Free Redoubt listeners a blessed Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
This is Old Crow, wishing y'all a very Merry Christmas and a Happy and Prosperous New Year from the Southern Redoubt.
This is Bravo Delta 01 from deep in the American Readout, wishing all the Radio Free Readout listeners and Amron members a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
This is Polly 01 wishing the Amron members and Radio Free Readout listeners a Merry Christmas.
This is Wingnut from Minnesota, wishing all the Amron a Happy New Year and a Merry Christmas. Enjoy time with family and friends, and just remember why we call it Christmas. This is Wingnut.
This is Delta 04 from the Readout of the South, wishing Amron a very Merry Christmas.
This is Charlie Delta 06, deep from within the liberal socialist stronghold of Seattle. I'm wishing Amron and everybody a very Merry Christmas.
And God bless us, everyone.
This is Matt Shea with your daily news commentary, the way I see it. Child Protective Services has a long and sordid history. Now they kidnapped a family's children because they home-birthed their twins. Shortly after the birth, paramedics showed up at the family home and recommended the children go to a hospital for evaluation. The family politely declined, and lo and behold, CPS showed up the next day. In a very rare move, the Attorney General's office then took over the case. This is the same AG who is persecuting Christian business owners for refusing to participate in same-sex wedding ceremonies. The fact someone is a Christian, home births, breastfeeds, and homeschools their children is not evidence of abuse. It's evidence of love. CPS is out of control, but thank God a courageous commissioner ruled against CPS and these children are going home for Christmas. But let us resolve to never let this happen again. At least, that's the way I see it. This is Matt Shea. Thank you for listening. Paid for by the Community Like Matt Shea Republic.
It's troubling to see our Christian heritage come under attack, isn't it? Right here in our own homeland. The first phase, that of removing references to Christ from public school Christmas programs, is creating the vacuum that phase two is poised to fill. Humans have a deeply inherent spiritual need to worship. We were made for it. The militant atheists claim they're striving for freedom from religion, but it shouldn't surprise us that their claims are disingenuous. Enter phase two. We are now seeing Muslim songs and references to Ramadan creeping into what are traditionally Christmas holiday season programs in our schools. Where are the atheists to chant and protest that religion has no place in the public schools? I haven't heard any. Well, there are voices of protest to the Islamification of our children. They are the voices of Christian parents who are told to be quiet and stop being Islamophobic or racist. Christians are beaten down and told they're not being loving or good Americans when they speak out against this hijra, the Islamic invasion through cultural jihad. What will it take to convince the American people that Islam is not peaceful? It is anti-Christian and it is anti-American. Don't be fooled, Christian patriots. Islam is not peaceful. It is patient. A sniper laying in his hide for hours or days is peaceful too, isn't he? I want to encourage the Christians, the remnant, to be bold in your faith. Christmas is about Christ and Christ alone, and I can't think of anything more American than that, so accept nothing less. I'm Violette Sabo, with points to ponder, words to live by, and ideals which define us.
Back once again with segment three, and segment three is brought to you by Werkz, WERKZ.com, for your custom Kydex holster and magazine carrier needs. It is a Patriot-owned business based in the American Redoubt with a lifetime guarantee on all their stuff. Don't forget to use the coupon code RFR to get your discount. If you're joining us late, we are interviewing the author of the Going Home series right now, A American, and book six is out. Book seven is in the making and due to be released very soon. We're going to talk about that in just a little bit, but A American, thank you for being with us once again.
Absolutely. Like I said earlier, it's fantastic to be with you guys. I've been a fan of what you guys do for a long time, and people don't understand the value of communication and sharing this information, which is part of the reason that that's the whole reason that this became a book series. One of the things you want to talk about, but the whole reason it became a book series was to share information. You know, my idea is just one guy's viewpoint, but like you said earlier, it's getting people to talk. And if we can get people to having these discussions and making some changes to their life, that's the greatest thing that can come from this, hands down. So,
big time. And it's interesting too, to see, you've obviously worked some of these things over in your head. I know some of it takes on a life of its own as you're writing, and a scene will develop. 5 minutes before, you didn't know how this was going to turn out, but once you start, you know, running with it, it just like takes a life of its own on. But there's definitely some areas that you do have expertise in, and definitely above, you know, subject matter, above and beyond what an average person would have. And that is your ability to produce or procure and I don't want to say scavenge. What's the word I'm looking for here? To be able to procure your own food off the land. And that's something that I would definitely want to talk about because and actually, while I got the thought before I lose it, because I probably won't come back to it if I don't address it. There was a statement in there that your character, which is This was you speaking. This was A. American. This is the author speaking here. when somebody says, why did you dedicate so much time and energy into learning about all the edible and poisonous plants and food and how to live off the land around here? And he says, because food equals freedom. And food has always been used as a weapon. And if you can't feed yourself, then you have to depend on someone else to do it. And that's when they own you. And that was a very profound statement that really stuck with me. And I could see that as kind of the driving force behind what your motivator for being self-reliant as far as being able to feed yourself. So how did that all get started? What was that? Talk about that journey.
Well, I got interested in wild edibles, almost 30 years ago. It was just, I spent a lot of time in the woods. You know, I grew up here in Florida, and as a kid, I was one of those kids that went out the back door at 7 a.m. with a BB gun, and I came home at dark. You know,
yeah.
I was fortunate to always live in rural areas for the most part, and I had the freedom to run the woods and waters of Florida. And it just always intrigued me, the native tribes, the way they lived, the things they ate always intrigued me. How do these people live without the modern conveniences we have? That evolved over years to that philosophy of what you just said, that food is freedom. And like you said, it can and will be used as a weapon. And being able to feed yourself and your family off the land, that's something that can't be taken from you. That's knowledge. You can have all the guns and ammo and gear stacked up, you know, to the sky. But if you can't put calories in your body to be able to do the other things you need to do to stay alive, you're done.
Yeah.
You've got 30, 40 days before you're in a position of, you know, you're not effective anymore. I mean, you'll be non-effective before that point, but by 30, 40 days, you're down and out. You know, you're not dead yet, but you might as well be because you couldn't fight off an infant at that point.
Right. And just within a matter of days or, you know, inside of a week, if you don't have those skills or if you're not prepared and have, you know, food storage, which can – you can lose that. You can be overran. You can have to abandon it. You could lose it in a fire. There's so many – you've got to have a plan to be able to produce your own food, which is – we talk about that anyway. Your food storage is there to keep you alive until you can begin producing your own food. You know, in this type of a environment like you describe in your book. And it was just a very, very powerful statement. And I hope that the readers really take that to heart because in this, you develop that scene, the example basically where there's this small community of, you know, a few families and some individuals that were feeding themselves, where the rest of the people were wandering down the road like zombies trying to make it to the DHS relief center. And there's a price to pay for that free food.
Yeah, there's nothing is free, and we know that.
Right.
You know? I took a lot of that kind of came from my experiences with hurricanes here in Florida. And I remember when my youngest daughter was born, she was born the day before we had a trio of hurricanes come through Florida. Like back to back, we were without power for a couple of weeks and stuff. And I remember in downtown, the small town I live in, of the lines of people waiting to get their 1 gallon of water and their 1 bag of ice.
Yeah.
And just seeing that really struck home to me, especially because I wasn't one of those people. I wasn't waiting in those lines. Even back then, I was prepared enough that we didn't suffer. We suffered very little inconvenience due to that. We had stuff put away. I had generators and fuel and water. I mean, I had everything we needed. Yep. My house almost functioned as if it was normal, with a few small exceptions. But that preparation. Now, going back to the food thing, the one thing I do want to say to people is learning these wild edibles is extremely important. You know, get the books, find some local experts, take classes, but bear in mind that you're not going to feed yourself on the level that you feed yourself now.
That's right. Plan on losing weight.
You're going to lose weight. It is a subsistence kind of lifestyle. It is literally hand-to-mouth, hunter-gatherer. You're going to go out today to get what you're going to eat today. In some cases, you can do a little bit better than that. But for the most part, it's go out today to get today's calories, and you're going to have to do it again tomorrow.
Yeah.
So it is very time-consuming. And you don't have the levels of energy and calories in these wild foods that you do, for the most part, in the stuff we eat today, you know, the carbs and the starches and the sugars and all that garbage.
Sure.
But, you know, it will keep you alive, you know, and you can get enough to to stay at a functioning level, you know, a very good functioning level. But it is a lot of work, you know. But, you know, like you said, your stores can be looted, stolen, robbed, burned. The government can take them. The knowledge you have of your wild edibles and the game habits, the fish, that things of your region, that's something that you can't lose.
That's right.
Once you have it forever. So.
Okay, so you obviously had this story bouncing around in your head for a while, and something made you actually start typing that out. So how did that happen?
Well, you would think I had this story bouncing around in my head for a while. The way that this happened was really funny, actually. I was reading stories that other people were writing online on a forum. And there's a lot of really good writers out there writing stuff on forums, and some of the stories are fantastic, and they do a great job. And I was reading several of them, had been following a bunch of them. And one night, I was sitting in my living room. It was about 11:30 at night. Everybody was in bed. I was by myself. And I had just finished reading a story, and I was sitting there thinking about it. And I was like, you know, that was pretty good, but, you know, all these stories I read are kind of missing something to me. And I sat there for a minute, and I went, what the hell? I'm going to write one. And literally, that was the impetus of it right then and there. And so I said, what am I going to do it on? All right, I'm going to do it on EMP because that's as bad as I can make it out of the gate.
Yep.
Horrible. And I just used the scenario of one of my trips. Like I said earlier, it started as a thought exercise. One of my trips out of town, you know, and what would I do? And that is exactly how it started. I wrote going home on that forum in about 90 days, posting every other day or so. It had over 2 million views online by the time it was done.
Wow.
I mean, it took on a life of its own. It became huge. I never dreamed it would do what it did. And when I finished it, I was like, all right, that was cool. That was fun. You know, I'm glad you guys liked it. And everybody's like, you need to publish. You need to publish. And I was like, no, I'm not a writer. People aren't going to pay money for this. I'm not going to publish this thing. I don't know how to publish it, you know.
Yeah.
And, but they were a persistent lot. And I've got to give credit to all those people back then that would not let up and kept insisting that I do it. And so I did self-publish it. It cost about $6,000 that first time to self-publish that book because I didn't know anything about it. I went online. I found a company that does it, you know.
Right.
And I just paid the money, you know. Not money I had either. Some other guys helped me. You know, I didn't have $6,000 at the time to do something like that.
Yeah.
And so it was self-published, and part of the deal was, you know, it went on Amazon, and they made the ebook and the prints and everything. And at the time, all I was doing was ordering the print books and selling the signed copies to people that wanted them. I wasn't paying much attention to it.
Right.
But then it got on Amazon, and it started to sell, and it started to sell very, very well. And I was like, wait a minute. You know, maybe there is something to this.
Wow.
And I actually had wrote Surviving Home in the time frame that Going Home was in the self-publishing process. I wrote the sequel on the same forum. You could read it for free. You could follow along as I did it. And was in the process of publishing that one. And, you know, Going Home had been online for quite a while. Not quite a while. It had been on about 6 weeks, I guess, when Penguin Books called up, made an offer. And that surprised me. I was really shocked by that. And to shock them, I turned it down. Which blew their minds. They were like, what do you mean no? And but they called me back 2 weeks later with one of those Godfather offers, you know, that you can't really say no to. So that's how it happened. It was totally by accident. I never set out to write a book. I was writing something for my own entertainment and kind of a thought exercise, a war game for me and the other people that are following online too. Because there were thousands of people that were commenting and sending me messages, and they'd ask questions, and I would actually answer them in the story, you know, and that was the whole way it happened. It was actually a lot of fun to do. I mean, I really enjoyed the whole process of doing that.
Well, so a tip for some aspiring authors out there, don't jump on the first offer.
No, don't jump on the first offer. you know, but it is, and everybody asks me, how'd you get published? I'm like, don't look to me as an example because it's like getting struck by lightning. Now, for people out there that are aspiring authors and want to break into any whatever genre it is, the one piece of advice I would give them is to emulate the first part of what I did. Build your audience first. Have a market for your product before you publish it. And by writing my stuff online, it was seen by tens of thousands.
Yeah.
And I had a built-in ready market And as soon as it published, it started to sell like crazy.
Well, then it goes viral because then they these guys have Facebook or, you know, Instagram or whatever. And they're saying, hey, this guy I've been following actually got this book published. I got to see it before it was published. Check it out. And then it just goes viral from there. So that's that's some very cool stuff. Now, you are up to book six and book seven is due to be out. So let's talk about that, and then we will get into some surprises for some of the listeners that have been following this. But before we do break, I just want to say what grabbed me about this book, and I think what sets it apart is that we all have these ideas in our head about having our get home bag or get out of Dodge bag. And if I'm out of town, this is what I need to get home safely. I need to be able to defend myself, feed myself, procure, treat water, and provide food, water, shelter. There's my basics and get home. And when I get home, everything will be all right if I can just get home. But then when you get home, you realize your home is also victim to these circumstances, and it's not the safe place that you thought it was going to be when you got there, and things are falling apart at home. Then what do you do? So basically, just getting home, like most preppers plan, is phase one. There's a whole another chapter, literally, after you get home. There's more things to contend with, and this really made the readers think about this. So yeah, it's very well done. But we're going to talk about book seven when we come back here at the Voice of the American Readout with A. American. Stay right there.
There is an exodus happening in America today, from cities full of crime and corruption to the rural areas of clean and sustainable living. Like-minded patriots are coming to North Idaho in search of a simpler, self-reliant lifestyle. I'm Chris Walsh, broker and owner of Revolutionary Realty, based in the heart of America's great readout, North Idaho. Sometimes God puts you somewhere for a special reason. For me, I believe it's to help like-minded patriots find safety and security for their loved ones. At Revolutionary Realty, we educate buyers about solar power, growing food, obtaining water, and personal security. I became a realtor in 2008 at the bottom of the real estate market, but not the top. I believe that there is a grand plan and that I'm just a part of it. My job is to help people discover and relocate to America's great redoubt. Call a revolutionary today at 208-667-1776 or visit us at revrealty.us to learn more. That's www.revrealty.us, and God bless you.
How safe is your property? How long could it sustain you? Have you considered how you might deal with various threats? Have you planned out your property to get the most out of it for secure and self-reliant living? Those are the questions that Strategic Landscape Design answers. Their services include planning for the primary needs of water, food, energy, and self-defense, providing consulting and design services to help fellow patriots achieve a prepared lifestyle. Take the next step in making yours a secure and productive self-sufficient property. Go to www.strategiclandscapedesign.com. All right, we're back with A. American from the Going Home book series. And this is the fourth and final segment here at Radio Free Readout, brought to you by Katie Armour, as in come and take it, C-A-T-I, katiearmour.com for all of your body armor needs, including the lightweight composite. They've got level 3 steel body armor now with the anti-spall coating on it. They've pretty much got whatever you're looking for, they got it. And they are a Patreon-owned business based in the American Redoubt. Great folks. Give them a call today and they will hook you up. Go to katiearmour.com, C-A-T-I-A-R-M-O-R, katiearmour.com. Hope you're enjoying this discussion, but we're going to get into some good stuff here now. A. American, you are working on book seven. So let's talk about book seven's release. We had a deadline, correct?
I had a deadline, but with my knee surgery and stuff and all the physical therapy I was doing, I had to move my deadline. So I was aiming for Christmas. That's not going to happen. Right now I'm still trying to do beginning of January. So I didn't move it far, but I had to move it some.
Okay. So now, a couple
in
weeks.
In the meantime,
then,
though, I do have a novella that I wrote amidst all this with a friend of mine, Walt Browning, and that's set in the Going Home world. And what it is it's following a small group in Orlando during the exact same time frame of the initial book of Going Home, of when the grid goes down, and these folks are actually over near the tourist corridor. And it shows just a different view of what's happening. And this is in town with people who are not prepared. They're not preppers in the least bit. Kind of just caught up in the moment. And we're going to start following these guys now, too. That little novella will probably come out next week.
Wow. Okay. Keep us posted for sure.
Yeah. And that's called Charlie's Requiem.
Charlie's Requiem.
Yeah.
All right. We'll have that to look forward to. And you say in about a week, huh? Sometime right around the January 1st-ish.
Yeah, hopefully before Christmas. This one should come out like sometime, you know, this week coming, I hope.
Oh, wow. Great.
It's going to be ready to upload to Amazon here in a day or two. The formatting's done. The cover's done. It's ready to go. So you guys will have a little novella to read in the meantime, and that'll be on Amazon. And, you know, I'll blast it out on Facebook and Twitter and everything when it's ready. But it's pretty interesting because, like I said, these are unprepared people, and the primary character in this one is a woman. So it's a little different take on things, but I think it's really good. I think it's really good.
Good deal. Now, book seven, have you released the name of that yet?
No, I haven't. There'll be a contest coming soon because I always like to do a little contest on the book titles for people to guess it. And I'll be posting that on Facebook here soon. Whoever guesses it, that I always give them a free signed copy for nail on the title.
Nice. So, okay.
Yeah. I have a title, but I haven't released it yet.
Well, I know it's I have the secret, and I will die with it before the book release if it comes to that. And I've got some people that they're hounding me to death. Come on, tell us what's I'm like, nope, I promise. So that's
It's gonna be cool. I mean, I was sitting here working on it when you called today. So I mean, I'm trying to get this thing done. Book seven is, you know, it's the continuation of the story, but a lot happens in book seven.
Yeah, you can see it building up, and I want to talk about that. Book six, you can definitely see all the groundwork being made for a serious confrontation with some pretty bad dudes. And I'm nervous. About as I was reading this and I saw the book coming to an end, I'm thinking, I would not want to go up against this group with the resources that they have and the seriousness. I mean, they're going to be pretty ruthless. So now in book seven, they have to confront this.
Yeah, that's, you know, you like we talked earlier, the whole action versus reaction thing, and Morgan established pretty early on how he approaches these things.
Yeah,
you know, he's not going to leave a problem lying, and it's not just Morgan. This stuff's over his head. You know, this goes back to Sarge and Mike and Ted and those guys, Ian. And now we've got this character, Dalton, who kind of showed up into the mix.
Yeah.
But like you said, this is a formidable group that they're looking at. You know, the bad actors, you know, birds of a feather kind of thing. You know, all over the world, governments use what they call militias or strongmen or whatever.
Criminals often.
Criminals.
Yeah, prisoners.
Well, you'll see that in Charlie's Requiem, too.
Mm.
But the government will get these people and support them. I mean, our government does it. We do it all over the world. ISIS, we form them.
Right.
But they will use these people to further their agenda by justifying the government's position. See, you need us because of these guys. Well, those guys only exist because the government's put them there. And so you see that the DHS is there. They're still trying to act like a benefactor, and yet they're encouraging death and destruction and rape and pillage and everything else through these third parties. And, you know, and Morgan, they're just aware of it. They understand it for what it is, whereas some of the civilians are still seeing it as, you know, the government's out to get us because they're, you know, we've got this conflict between the military, the DOD, and the Department of Homeland Security and the federal military. You know?
Right.
There's a distinction there. Obama said it when he came into office, and I'm not saying this is all about Obama, but he wanted a federal presence, and then we have the defense, the military.
Yep.
And they're distinct. And the ideologies inside of those two things are very distinct as well.
Yes, they are. Absolutely.
Very distinct. Now, there's a lot of patriots in Homeland Security. I don't doubt that a bit.
Right.
but they are cultivating a particular kind of individual inside of that organization.
Well, and they're purging out the patriots when they do find them. They're making it very difficult, even among the military, for true patriots to stay around. And, you know, so even though they are there, they are confronted with decisions, serious decisions that they have to make as far as their careers, you know, pursuing being there. So we're thankful for the ones that are there now, but they got some serious decisions to make in the future.
Yeah, and it, and a lot of it comes down to how do they represent themselves at the time. You know,
they can
kind of keep their mouth shut and go along with the game, make it appear they're going along with the game. But the moment they speak up or stand up for what they truly believe, they're done, and they know that. So it's a tough spot for those guys, those men and women to be in, and you know, nothing but praise to them, and you know, and prayers for them. Yeah. Honestly,
absolutely. So. Now, book seven. Is this going to continue to be an isolated environment where we're just dealing with Florida and this little group in Florida?
No. We are going to, in book seven, we're going to be pulling the veil back. Actually, we're just going to rip it off.
There you go.
There's going to be a lot of revelations in this book. Morgan and his people and some others are going to start seeing things around the country. Not physically seeing them, but through, as you preach, the use of their comms, this stuff comes in big time in this book. They're going to start seeing what's happening in the rest of the country.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the scope of things broadens dramatically. There's some huge things that are going to happen here that are very, very, very plausible. You know, America in the weakened state it would be in this sort of a situation – would be looked upon as others as ripe for the picking.
Yeah, opportunity for exploitation by other nation states, even.
Other nation states, you know, other groups. So there's going to be a dramatic shift in the story. Some people have told me, some fans that love the stories, they say there's got to be some hope at some point. Things have got to get better, you know, And yeah, they will at some point. But if you look at Going Home, the series right now, we've got six books. Those six books only cover about 7 to 8 months of time frame.
That's right.
You're not talking much time in those six books. And 8 months after an event like this is not much time for things to settle down. You know, it'll be years and years before things really settle down. So we've seen kind of some peaks and valleys. You know, there's some rough times and then things get better, you know, and then they take a kind of a turn for the worse, you know, and that's where we're at. But we're fixing to see a monumental shift in the for better, for worse.
Right.
It's gonna get real interesting here pretty soon. Now, that doesn't mean there's not good things that happen. There's some really cool things that take place in the book too.
Sure.
Some kind of heartwarming sort of stuff that happens. And I think people will have to do just to try to maintain their sanity. They'll do these sorts of things just to try to draw back that this is how it used to be and when times were good and this is the things we used to do.
You got to have those endearing moments so you don't you know, completely go into despair where you just have resolved that there is no hope, you know.
Well, exactly. You know, like we saw with Morgan's daughter, Leanne, you know, with the scene with Thad where she was – essentially decided it was all over, not worth living for anymore because it was never going to get any better.
Yep.
You know, and Thad happened to be there at the right moment and he prevented that from happening. But that little girl saw the light, she came around, but even her, this is wearing on her a little bit and she's getting quite the hard edge to her now. She's, and we're gonna have to see how that plays out, but she's becoming pretty numb to a lot of things going on around her.
And that's realistic. It's very realistically laid out. And now we've got some, for the listeners in this audience, we've got some special surprises that they can look forward to as well. But we don't want to spoil it. But
now we don't want to spoil it. But we definitely want, especially your listeners and the followers of the Redoubt, and those patriots and preppers out there that understand comms and how they work and what their benefit is, to pay particular attention to this book.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's some surprises in here for you guys.
There we go. Which, I think that's about all we should say, huh?
Yeah. You're going to have to be on your toes, but there are some surprises in this book.
They will. And I think they'll get it. They'll get it. They'll immediately identify and say, hey, I recognize that
thing. Well, as soon as – once the book's out, I will – and I'll give it a couple of weeks for people to digest it. Then I'm going to start posting some things on Facebook, asking some questions. And we'll do something with that later. But, yeah, I think no one's done anything like this before. You know, John's jumped in to help me with something here that's going to be really, really cool and really drive home the importance and the value of comms, because it is. You know, food is freedom, like we said earlier, but information can be just as valuable.
Absolutely.
You know, you can't live in a bubble. You've got to have some situational awareness. And in our society, you know, you think back just 10 years ago to what we had for information. You know, the access to it and what we have now.
Right.
It's just phenomenal. Now, you suck all that away, there's an informational vacuum.
Yep.
And if you're one of those folks that only has an AM FM radio, you're only going to get the pablum that you're fed from the powers that be that control those transmitters.
Yeah. If they're operational.
Well, they would have them. They would make something operational.
Absolutely.
They're going to.
And it would be filtered.
Hand out, you know. They'll get some way to transmit. This is where what you teach and what you talk about comes in. You can, you know, we can get the old Paul Harvey version, you know, the rest of the story.
Exactly. Well, that's going to be a good time. Okay, so what else do you want the readers to look forward to with this this next book series? What else can we expect? And where do you see, how far do you see this going?
Well, I've been asked a lot of times, how far do I intend to take it? And initially, it was going to end at book 7. But people seem to enjoy it so much, and I get so much interaction from people on my Facebook page and email and stuff, that as long as the story is still a quality story and it's still got some teaching moments in it and the story is advancing and people like it, I'm going to keep it going.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, we're only 8 months in. There's a lot to happen yet. There's, especially after book 7, the possibilities of how this thing can go are going to blow up. And, you know, it can go on for a long time. You know, I kind of started thinking the other night about the old Out of the Ashes series and how far that went. You know, I mean,
yeah,
there were so many books of that series. And this might be kind of another version of that sort of a deal, where we can follow these characters for years to see.
Yeah, we'll let it play out instead of, you know, trying to put a limit on it. Just see where it goes. It's a great story. It's a plausible story. It's very realistic. The characters that are in there are very realistic, which I have to, you know, warn the readers too, or the listeners, because, you know, we have a largely Christian audience. There's some pretty salty language in here, and there's some scenes that could be offensive to some people. And, you know, I don't talk like that anymore. I did when I was a young man, but it doesn't really, I just read through it. Well, there's one pastor, I want to tell you this. He thought, this is so valuable of a story that people need to read this, and I want to share it with folks, but I don't want them to think I'm endorsing cussing. So he went through and he marked out all the curse words and wrote, you know, something else, you know, some innocuous word above it, so he could pass copies out to people that he knew. But the, you know, the story is it's so realistic. The characters, the military guys. Now, let me ask you about that. You got Sarge, you got Doc, you got, you know, Ted and Mike. These are some really squared away guys that I can relate to. I love the team, and when the story, you know, talks about them as well. Do you know guys like this in your life? I mean, do you have a team? Where did that influence come from?
Those guys are an amalgamation of people that I've known over the years. I enlisted in the Marine Corps right out of high school. I had an injury to my eyes and ended up getting dropped out of the program. But I lived and breathed that up until I went in as a young man. My dad was prior service, and I've got a load of friends that are prior service. And that kind of attitude and camaraderie and everything also existed in the trade that I was in for close to 20 years, which is industrial construction.
Yeah.
You know, we talked with each other, we messed with each other. And so it's a pretty easy transition from military to that and back and forth. And my buddies that are prior service and currently serving, I talk to a lot of these guys and I know how they think and how they work. And some people criticize the joking around, the pranking that these guys do, but you know, the guys in the military that are in combat in particular, that's a release, you know, when they're not in the thick of it at the moment, they're going to do those kind of things for a release.
And they do.
Yeah. And it's like Sarge says in the book too, if I'm not screwing with them, they'd think I didn't like them, you know?
Yeah.
It's, you know, cause, and that's the case. You know, if you've got guys that you mess around with and joke with and play pranks on and stuff, you know, they're your friends. The guy that you don't do that kind of thing to, he knows he's on the outside. And so it really is kind of a brotherhood, a bonding sort of thing. And on the language thing, I want to mention it because some people talk about it and it's there for a reason. And it's kind of a harsh slap in the head reason. This is an ugly world. People aren't going to say please and thank you.
Yeah.
You know, in this kind of thing, the language they use is going to be the least offensive thing they're going to do to you.
Right. Yeah. No doubt.
Yeah. And you know, I didn't write this to try to coddle anybody's personal opinions or feelings or whatever. And I've gotten criticized for the language before, but this in this kind of a world, think about. I mean, everything is falling away. There is no more civilized society. That's gone, and
right.
People are gonna use foul language, you know. Yeah. And yeah, the military guys, they use it quite a bit because most of the guys I was around, they always did, and it just kind of followed through. Now there's a lot that don't, and you'll see in the book, you know, with the one character Dalton, he hardly ever does. If he does, everybody looks at him. They're like, "What? Something must be really wrong here." Because
now we know he's really mad.
Yeah, and we know. So I'm scared now. You know, but so there are those that do and those that don't. You know, and there's a time and a place for it too, and that kind of comes through as well, I think, in the stories.
Yeah.
There's times when you don't hear that stuff. There's times when you do hear that stuff.
Well,
and it sort of sets the scene, really, the feeling of the moment.
It does, and it was also that really showed through with moments with the families and with the children and around the children. And I think that was another really powerful part of the story was that it was the struggle to maintain the family, the cohesiveness, and maintain normalcy and protect the children from the ugliness of the world while slowly kind of releasing, the leash to they didn't shelter them as in, you know, we don't want them to know what an ugly world this is now. Although that did, those things did happen. Those moments happened where, you know, Morgan and his wife she's trying to, you know, shelter the children from this new ugly world. They had to work through that. So now these kids, you know, they're very resilient. They adapt to the world that they're living in. They live differently. They have different attitudes, but they're still the whole group is working to, you know, maintain these children's innocence and security while still letting them, I guess, grab the gravity of the world that they're living in.
Well, that and also they need to learn the skills required to live in this new world.
Yes.
And you see Morgan, he's always kind of fighting with that whole issue. And it really came out in Enforcing Home when Taylor gets hurt and he's questioning himself, why did I let her go do it? You know, this is all my fault. But in the end, you know, you can't hold him back forever. And in that world, you know, we hear about the teacup generation and these kids today that need safe spaces and all this other garbage. These kids are going to grow up in a world that is way different than anything else.
Yeah.
And they need to know how to survive in that world.
Yep.
And you can't do that by keeping them behind locked doors. And so that's going to continue throughout the story. You know, we've got Little Bit, who's a sharp little girl in the book, but she's still a little girl. You know, she's 9 years old. You know, she's got a lot of life ahead of her. And it's how fast do you want her to see this stuff? But for a 9-year-old kid, you know, much like kids in Afghanistan and Iraq and Syria, she's already seen a lot for her young, her few years.
Yeah. And it was helping, you know, how do you help them cope with that? The things that you think would be shocking to them. Oh, I'm going to have to counsel her on this. And she's not fazed by it. You know, where other things, is very impactful. And knowing how to, deal with a young mind that's being exposed to, you know, death and hardship. It was just, I think it's just very well done.
Well, there's a scene in book 7 that kind of drives that fact home, you know, that the community has had loss. They've had loss before. There's loss in this book as well. But then there's another loss in the book that has a more effect on her than the other ones. Hmm. And it kind of shows that difference, what we were just talking about, of how they absorb those impacts and those changes, and what can affect them more may be surprising, you know. And I'm not going to give it away because it's a pretty interesting scene.
Yeah.
For her and the way she reacts to something. But it's from a kid's point of view, and I think it's pretty interesting. So I don't want to give it away, but it's pretty neat. I think the readers will.
Well,
they won't like it, but they'll like it.
They'll have they'll have an appreciation for it.
Yeah, they will.
All right, well, sir, thank you very much for taking the time. This is I know that's something that, you know, I'm looking forward to, and it's been great collaborating with you on certain parts of this, and so we're all looking forward to seeing how it's all going to play out. And I know I got quite a few listeners that. Are discussing it and anticipating the release of book 7. So we're going to definitely be looking forward to that. And we're going to see if we can still get a set of those to incorporate into some of our communications training for the Amron operators. So,
absolutely. Like, yeah, we discussed that. You just let me know and
you bet. We'll
work something out fun for them and get somebody a full set of books.
That sounds great. We'll wait till book 7 comes out here, and then we'll make the announcement, and we'll work those details out when that time comes. And hopefully sooner rather than later, in the first or second week of January, that'd be great. Great for New Year's.
That's what I'm hoping for. That's my goal right now. It's I'm cranking away on it. So I'm knuckling down here pretty hard right now. So.
Yeah, and here I am distracting you, but
that's all right. I need a break. I'm fixing to go out in the yard and shoot some stuff. Actually, take a break for a while. So
there you go. That'll do it.
Well, I got a new AR that needs to run. So
there you go. Well, tell the listeners then before we wrap up. Where can they go to learn more? Do you got a website, blog, anything dedicated toward? I mean, you know, besides just sending them to Amazon. But and we'll have links and all that stuff, and we'll make an announcement when the book's released. But where can they go to learn more?
Well, you can get the books obviously anywhere. The first 5 anywhere. Book 6 is only available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble at the moment. It is also on Nook. That was just recently released.
Ah.
But if you want to check up on what I'm doing, you can look up Angry American, A-N-G-E-R-Y, American, on Facebook. I'm on there all the time. I interact with everybody there. And I also have a website with a forum, angryamerican.com. And you can check those out. There's a new site that we really haven't released yet, but it's coming online, and that's angryamericansurvival.com. And that focuses more on skills and equipment reviews and things like that. And it's kind of a blog more than anything else. I post videos there, and we post articles on everything from homesteading to weapons maintenance to you name it.
Perfect.
The angryamerican.com has got a forum that covers everything from politics to humor to survival to weapons to you name it. And it's pretty active. We've got a lot of really good folks over there. So drop in and check it out.
Right on. Okay. Thank you so much. And that's Angry American, A-N-G-E-R-Y. That threw me off the first time I tried tracking it down.
Well, there's an actual definition for that. People think I misspelled it, and I get a lot of grief as an author and I can't spell the word angry. But the definition for that is being angry over something stupid or trivial.
Ah.
But as Americans, we're not angry over trivial things. We're angry over very serious things.
Yes.
But our representatives see them all as trivial things.
Yeah.
And that's the whole play on that name.
Yeah. Good. Well done. And well done on the book series. And congratulations on book 7. And it's so close to being done. So we all look forward to that. And we will definitely be staying in touch with you as well. So thank you once again for taking the time.
Well, thanks for having me, John. I really appreciate it. I really appreciate your help on this. I think your listeners in particular are going to enjoy the next book, and we're going to teach some folks some stuff. So thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
Have a good time.
All right. Well, God bless, and 73 to you. American, angry American, folks. Well, that's a wrap, and that is the last broadcast for 2015. We will be, as a reminder, taking next week off, the weekend of Christmas. So you all be safe, be alert, be vigilant, and take the time to celebrate the birth of our King. And with that, I will be talking to you next year, 2016, for our very first episode that weekend following the New Year's for episode 1601. With that, you have been listening to Radio Free Redoubt, the voice of the American Redoubt. Good night.